You're listening to the Drawing the Ideal Self podcast for March 2024. Today's episode is going to be about our construction of time. Over the past 2 or 3 months, I've listened to about 3 or 4 things on the radio that were about time and whether we can perceive it, what we have to say about it. And I thought it might be interesting to think about how we construe it. But I want to tell you what they had to say in these programmes. I'll put the links in the show notes because they are really all worth a listen. One was the BBC's All in the Mind programme, which is a programme about mental health. And that was asking why it's difficult for us to recall 2021, which of course was during the pandemic. Another one was called A Sense of Time, and it was asking whether we can actually learn to sense time if we find that very difficult. And it features a woman called Marie who doesn't have a sense of time at all and wanted to know whether it'd be possible for her to learn it. And then there's another one, which is whether or not we do have a sense of time. And that's about the connections between body signals and time perception. So what I've done is listen to all of these and try to pull together the main points overall. And I'll put the details for you to follow up and listen to those yourselves. And I think you might find them very interesting. I was particularly fascinated by the woman who was asking whether or not she'd be able to learn a sense of time, and she really doesn't have one. It's not so much that she doesn't have one at all, but the sense of time she has is very unreliable and doesn't connect well enough to how much time everybody else tells her has passed. Together, all of these talked about the importance of the personal perception of time. And being able to perceive time and report things in a sequence depends on whether you can remember things in the past, whether you can think about the future, whether you have a sense of time passing now, and whether you can sequence events. So there are clearly some executive function things going on there. And we can understand then why it's so difficult for people who have damage to their brain, either through dementia or accidents, or maybe have areas of their brain that are yet to develop. So that would apply to children. On one of the programmes, I talked to a Hungarian neuroscientist whose specialism is space and time. And he said, we made up the term time to contrast ourselves with the vastness of the universe, and that we have a societal agreement about what time is and how it is measured. So we made up the units that we use for measurement, and our kind of study of time became scientific once we started being able to measure it. He says space and time are the crutches of human thinking. If you take them away, our communication system collapses. He makes the point that children are not born with a sense of time, but it's something that they learn from the society they live in. And we all infer time rather than actually perceive time itself. Another thing that came up in these programmes was the importance of memory and of sensations of feeling time passing at the moment. So our body sends signals to the brain, which we use to perceive the time duration. And they talked about the insula in the brain recording the body sensing itself. And that's the thing that we use to perceive the passing of time. So something like a signal telling us we're hungry will tell us about time passing, but that is inferred. And some experiences can seem longer than others. So generally, things that are unpleasant can seem longer than things that are pleasant. Now that's pretty important if we're working with people. So if we talk to people about how long something horrible in their life has gone on, they may tell us it lasted years. I don't think there's any point arguing the point, but just bear in mind that they may be reporting something that didn't last physical years that you could count on a calendar, but to them it seemed like years. So they were saying that what goes on in the brain is that the hippocampus is extremely important because that's involved in memory and in the perception, therefore, of time passing. So people with Alzheimer's will struggle with memory and sequencing and spatial navigation. They also talked about the fact that changes in our brain create neural patterns that form long sequences, and the patterns can be associated then with events that we experience. Those neural sequences create a time memory. So we've got patterns and sequences, and we kind of assign the timestamps to them and learn the relationships between the important events and a clock or a calendar so that we can organise our memories. They also stress the importance of novelty in making those memories clear to us. So during childhood, we have many, many, many new experiences, and it can feel that time is very long. So it can lead us to make a perception of time that means that we feel things have gone on forever. And if you think about childhood summer holidays from school, they seem very long. And I would say really, really long compared with my experience of them as a teacher. It seemed like a flash before you're having to go back to class again. So doing things that are novel will help us to experience time as being more full and being more eventful. And that's important and is related to what happened during the pandemic, where every day was pretty much routine. There weren't many things you're allowed to do, so people lacked novelty in their lives. So when they try to remember events that happened during the pandemic, it can be quite difficult to recall them. And if I think from my own point of view, one of my children was 18 during the pandemic. We couldn't go out, we couldn't do anything. And I really struggled to remember what did we do on that day. I can remember it, but it was a much more of an effort than you would expect for somebody's 18th, which is a big day. So if we want time to feel longer, we need to do more things that are new things for us, because then that involves more laying down of information and perhaps new pathways being built in our brains. So why might it be important to explore time? If we're working with people, we need to know what they mean by what they have to say. And time is no exception to that. So if they explain things that have happened to them and they put them on a timeline, you know, that's their experience of what they think happened in what order and also of how things were in relation to what else was going on in their life. But bear in mind that if it was something that was an unpleasant experience, the experience of it may have felt much longer than if it was something nice. It's interesting that there's not much PCP literature on time, given that it's such a big deal in our lives. There is a chapter in a Dorothy Rowe book, which is her book, Dorothy Rowe's Guide to Life, written in 1995, so it's a bit dated. But I thought I might read a bit of what she says in there, because she has an idea for how you might explore it with someone using drawing. The chapter is called You and Time. We live in the world, and we live in time. We measure time so that everyone can agree what time is. Yet each of us has our own individual experience of time. How do you picture yourself and time? This is a question I asked a number of people when I was researching for my book, Time on Our Side. In asking this question, I discovered that my picture of time and me had changed over the years. I used to see time as a wind blowing past me, but now it is a moving walkway. The picture I see now is that time is like one of those moving walkways found in large airports. However, my time walkway is infinitely long and moves from the past into the future. When as a tiny child I woke to self-awareness, I discovered myself on this walkway. I walked along the walkway, and for my first 3 decades, time and I kept pace with one another. But then, though my pace remained the same, the walkway got faster and faster. Now the past lengthens behind me far beyond the point where I joined the walkway. But ahead, the walkway disappears into a mist which is coming closer and closer. I can see a relationship between this image and how I feel about my life right now. For instance, I recently read in my favourite paper, The Guardian, that Rupert Murdoch was reported to have said that in 10 or 20 years' time, there would only be 3 national newspapers, The Sun, The Times and The Daily Mail. 10 years ago, such a remark would have enraged me. But now my immediate thought was, I won't be here to see that. The people I asked to draw a picture of their relationship to time were people I knew well. I found that I could easily see a relationship between their picture and their lives. My friend John, a very successful businessman, drew a series of mountain ranges and above them a line of clocks disappearing off into the distance. He drew himself running up the side of the first mountain, and in keeping with the confidence he has in his ability to surmount difficulties, his figure is larger than the mountains. During a summer vacation, David at 14 drew an hourglass in the centre of his picture. From bottom left to top right, time was traversed by yellow suns and yellow cloud, representing summer vacations. To the top left and bottom right were 2 heavy, black, august buildings representing school. Beyond each of these were the promises of the future, a mortarboard and a diploma, each emitting rays of golden light. David explained that he was caught in the school cycle. This vacation is too short, and I'm not looking forward to another year of high school. David's picture presents time as both a circle and a line into the future. Those of us who grew up in industrialised countries are used to time being presented in a linear fashion, along with the idea of progress, a way of interpreting life which became popular only during the Industrial Revolution. Before then, life was not seen in terms of progress, except in so far as the good could see themselves progressing to heaven and the wicked to hell. Ordinary life was dominated by the recurring round of the seasons. In societies where each generation lived a life much the same as all the successive generations, time was circular. The Balinese saw a grandson as being the reincarnation of his dead grandfather. Our experience of time is very curious. When we're enjoying ourselves, time goes quickly. When we're bored, it drags. As we get older, time goes faster and faster. We talk about space and time as if they are equal attributes of our world. Yet we can go back and forth in space, but not in time. We cannot revisit our yesterdays. If we turn to physics to find out what time really is, we get confusing answers. In what physicists call their classical theories, time as a one-way path disappears. And in space-time, the events of the universe are laid out. The theories work equally well with time going forwards or backwards. However, in the second law of thermodynamics, which is about how things wear out, time accords with our experience. Time goes only one way. Heat always flows from the hot water bottle to the cold sheets, not from the sheets, making them colder and the water bottle hotter. For many years, philosophers argued about the nature of time, but now it has seemed that our sense of time is neither a necessary condition of our experience as Kant thought, nor a simple sensation, as Mach believed, but an intellectual construction. What we know as time is an interpretation, just like everything else we experience.
So you could have a try with her technique, drawing a picture to represent your experience of time. That might be quite interesting to do as a family as well, particularly if you wanted to explore particular times of the day.
So if you had a teenager and a parent exploring, say, the hour before they have to go out of the house to go to school, you know, it might have quite a different sense to a teenager than it does to a parent. And it would be interesting to see what they drew for that. You could get a whole family to do it, and then to compare their pictures and to, in the process of doing that, to help each other to understand something different about themselves in terms of how they experience their lives and time within it. Inevitably, any exploration like that is going to lead to further questions and the exploration of constructs and contrast poles. There may be some laddering or pyramiding to explore further, or picking up on individual constructs that come up and exploring those. So whatever happens, you will end up with a nice, rich experience that you can draw constructs from to go further with any individual within a family group. In my experience, time leads to a lot of conflict in family situations, with different perceptions being a real problem. So it is worth exploring that. The programme that was about whether or not we could develop a sense of time if we don't have a good one was interesting in saying that it's to do with the perception of bodily symptoms and the construction of those first, and then we hook them onto times or the sense of time passing. But if you're somebody who doesn't really notice your bodily functions, you don't know if you're hungry, you don't know if you're cold when you've been outside for an hour, things like that become very difficult, and you can see why it can be quite an issue in people who are neurodivergent that time doesn't necessarily tally with other people's experience of time. It may be helpful to help people to understand that their experience is individual and that they don't perceive time passing for every event in the same way. So if you were talking to somebody about activities they enjoyed and didn't enjoy, you could get them to draw a line for how long that activity felt to them. And you could do that for a number of different things. That might be quite useful if you're working with, say, children who are young and feel that they have to stay in a lesson that's unbearable for a very long time, or in a place that's unbearable. So understanding their idea of how long that seemed to be, and maybe instead of using hours on a clock, to use other experiences to compare it with. So how long was maths compared with football? You could also think about how you might use timelines when you want people to put certain events on them. So it might be more helpful to have a timeline as a sort of wiggly line, a bit like the shape of a worm or a snake. So it's bending round and curving back on itself, rather than it's a straight line, because I think there might be a temptation, if you have a straight line, for people to divide it up into kind of equal amounts per year or per month or whatever. Whereas if you have a curving line, you might be able to get them to expand on that and ask them to put things on it, and then think about how much space there is between those things, and just notice whether things are more spaced apart when they're nice or when they're horrible events, whether some of the horrible events seem to have gone on for a very long time, and that it seems, you know, that a year of horrible events seems longer than a year of good events, that kind of thing. But I do think having a straight timeline invites equidistant markers, and we don't necessarily want that when we're working in a PCP way. We want people's personal perceptions to be the most important thing. Okay, well, I really think it could be worth you listening to those programs. I guess I'm a bit biased about Radio 4 because it's what I listen to in the UK, but I do find that there are some really interesting things on there, and those particular programs made me think a lot. All right, I think that's enough for today. So
I hope you will come back and listen to another episode, and I will see you again at the end of April. Bye.